Marriage, it's a constantly evolving institution, and gay marriage is an inevitable part of that evolution. There's no such thing as a traditional marriage. That's in the view of our next guest, who has charted the history of marriage for many years now, written many books on this subject. Stephanie Kuntz is a history professor at Evergreen State College in the US. And when the United States Supreme Court earlier in this year ruled in favour of gay marriage, Justice Anthony Kennedy cited her work as part of the decision-making of the court. Stephanie Kuntz is currently in Tasmania. She took part in a conversation on marriage equality at the University of Tasmania last night. Stephanie, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Well, thank you very much.
Your point is that marriage has changed, evolved to such a point that gay marriage was, in a sense, inevitable in the United States. What makes you say that?
Well, for thousands of years, you know, marriage was not about love. It was not about free choice. It was actually more about acquiring in-laws than about acquiring any particular person you loved. It was the way that the rich people made peace treaties and military alliances, made business deals. It's the way you recruited for your family labor force, which is why bakers married other bakers. They didn't just randomly fall in love with someone who couldn't help out in the family labor force.
When did we get to marry for love?
Not really until that didn't become respectable really until the late 18th century during the Enlightenment, and the idea that maybe the state and the older generation shouldn't dictate to the young. But even then, there were all sorts of other reasons that made it seem not really relevant to gays and lesbians. For one thing, marriage was an authority relationship. Men were in charge of women, and right up until the 1970s, Australia and most other Western countries had head and master laws that gave the man the right to his wife's sexual service. You couldn't be prosecuted for raping your wife, only for raping someone who wasn't your wife. There were these different duties assigned to men and women.
Yes, not the church, not the state. Women must decide their fate was the slogan at the time.
That was one of them. Yes, absolutely. And so gradually over the years, in the 1920s. In the 30s, married couples could not use contraception, and they had to win that right not to have children. But if you were biologically incapable of having children, then you were not allowed assisted reproduction. It was considered a form of adultery and any resultant child illegitimate. So over the last 60 years, we have completely changed the nature of marriage. We've made it about love. We've made it about free choice. We've said you don't have to have kids if you don't want them. But if you do want them, there are all sorts of other ways you can have kids. And then the final straw, I think, was that we said we're no longer going to organize marriage as something that has to have a husband who plays one role and has one set of rights and a wife who has a different role and a different set of rights and duties. And as soon as you say that, you're basically I think gays and lesbians are saying, well, for heaven's sakes, you have now redefined this institution that makes it relevant to us. And increasing numbers of heterosexuals are saying, hey, why shouldn't we open marriage since our own marriages increasingly depend on this kind of equality and individuality and negotiation rather than the imposition of rigid gender roles.
That history you chart there shows absolutely that it's not a set institution, it's an evolving institution. Was the most important point perhaps in the 60s when the US Supreme Court said, and this was around the change to interracial marriages, but found that marriage was a right, that you can't deny it to interracial couples, you can't deny it to prisoners, you can't deny it to men who owe child support. If marriage is a right, doesn't everything else flow from that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And one thing people forget is that through most of history, marriage was not a right. It was not just denied to same-sex couples, but to prisoners, to people of different classes and races. So we have gradually accepted the idea that marriage is a right. And especially as we've developed it as a process of negotiation. And one of the most exciting things, Fran, about the growing acceptance of same-sex marriage is heterosexual couples and same-sex couples have so much to learn from each other. We're finding that one of the best predictors in a heterosexual marriage of a happy marriage, good sex, frequent sex, satisfactory, one of the best predictors that the marriage will not divorce is a sharing of gender roles, not just just of breadwinning, but of childcare and housework. And, of course, gays and lesbians have a head start on that and can teach us something about that.
Well, something has certainly changed public opinion quite quickly on this. This is a point you've commented on before, because the decision in the US Supreme Court was kind of a surprise, I think, for many, because it was a change that had tumbled along quite quickly. And it's the same in this country. Public opinion seems to be ahead of the lawmakers. But it's changed in a very few years, really.
Yes, faster than any other changes we've seen. The fight for gender equality, for racial equality, recognition of First Peoples' rights, all of that took much longer. It was only 2 years ago that a majority of Americans opposed same-sex marriage. Before the Supreme Court made its decision, not afterwards, before, 60% of Americans supported it.
It's likely there's going to be a plebiscite in this country on gay marriage, and the Parliament says it will be directed by that result. So the people are going to vote and are going to decide on this. How unusual is it for a government or a court to rule on what defines a marriage?
Well, like many Americans, I'm fairly ignorant about parliamentary politics.
Yes.
And I understand from many people that having a plebiscite on this is actually quite rare to have plebiscite on these. These kind of voting is very common in the United States. But one of the things we see, however the vote goes, and it sounds as though a majority of Australians are now in favor of same-sex marriage, but it gives us a does give you a chance, whatever else you think of it, to air some of these issues and assuage some of the concerns. We now have so much good research, for example, to answer the objection that same-sex parents pose problems to children. In fact, if anything, there are very, very few differences we've seen in longitudinal studies. And if there are anything, there may be some advantages. For example, kids of same-sex parents actually initiate sexual activity later than kids of heterosexual families on average.
It's 22 past 8. Stephanie Kuntz is Professor of History and Family at Evergreen State College in the United States, and author of a number of books, including Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. Just finally, Stephanie, here in Australia, there's a pretty solid opposition to the notion of same-sex marriage from the church, and there are religious arguments and concerns about changing the law. Presumably it's the same in the United States. How have those being managed, or are they being managed?
Well, any church has the right to decide what its own personal approach to it will be. But, you know, for thousands of years, marriage was something that neither the church nor the state ruled upon. It was a decision between families. And increasingly, I think, you know, here's a good model for it. Back in, for the first 12 centuries of its existence, the Christian church was actually very kind of hostile to marriage. They thought that marriage was not a sacrament till 1215. They thought the most important thing was to go out and build the Christian community, and staying celibate and not marrying and doing that was a higher thing than getting married. But when it came to marriage, they took the position finally that, yes, we do approve of marriage. A licit marriage is one that has the approval of the parents, the woman has a dowry, it takes place in church. But an illicit marriage, we don't necessarily approve of it, but we can't stop it, and we're actually going to recognize all of its rules. So I think the churches that disapprove are welcome to call it illicit, but I don't think they can deny that right to marriage to somebody else.
Stephanie Kuntz, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Stephanie Kuntz, a professor of history and family at Evergreen State College in the United States and author of a number of books, including Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. And she's here in Australia as a guest of the Australian Sociological Association.